Hey there, Surf Splendor listeners. This is your host, David Scales. Thanks for tuning in, downloading, I should say. I guess there's not really a tuner any longer, but thanks for downloading. And today, I got together with Scott Bass to bring you another episode of Surf News, and it was good. It's always good to get together with Scott. I don't know if you probably aren't aware of this, but Scott and I really, the only time we ever get to catch up is during the show. We see each other for 2 minutes before and maybe 10 minutes after, but don't really see each other throughout the week. So always good to get together and do the show and talk surf. And so there's that. I'll lead into that in a second. I want to say thanks for listening to last week's episode with Tony Roberts on surf photography and filmmaking. I really enjoyed my time with Tony. And I didn't fully elaborate, but he and I were together on a surf trip. And that's where we recorded that interview. But the trip itself is going to be another episode called Anatomy of a Surf Trip. And I've been working on that episode, and I plan to get that out next week on Monday. That will be the next episode of Surf Splendor. But there's a million different audio files and a lot of post-production editing and cutting that needs to be done and that is being done. But bear with me if it's not up on Monday. My goal is to have it up on Monday, but if it's not there Monday, you know, hopefully Tuesday. Just a lot of work going into that one. But I think it'll be good, and it'll be a little bit different style episode than we've done in the past. And hopefully we'll do it again in the future, you know. Always good to go on surf trips. And I know that we have a lot of new listeners now. The numbers have been growing a lot of new subscribers. So welcome to the show. But I'd like to also say that all of our past shows are archived on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. They're also archived in Stitcher and in iTunes. Everything is free. I think there's 25 episodes. So please go back and listen to past episodes. The first one we did was with Chris Cote. We did a photography episode with Aaron Chang and Morgan Mawson. And then Five Summer Stories and a bunch of other episodes in between that are really worth listening to. Sean Thompson episode I really enjoyed doing. So take your time, 25 hours of content right there for you, and enjoy. And feel free to send feedback on social media at Surf Splendor or on our website. Each show has its own page with a comment section, so you can comment about whatever we're discussing on the show. Always appreciate reading that stuff. All right, so without further ado, here is Surf News with Scott Bass. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome everybody down the line. Surf Talk Radio. Yeah, guy.
I don't know if you're familiar, David, but that was a catchphrase of the old show. We used to say a lot. So a lot of times you'll see emails that come to us and it says, yeah, guy.
You know what's funny is I have friends that use that phrase, and I just thought it was a thing. I didn't know that's where it generated from or started from.
I don't want to take full credit for the yeah, guy
you just did
phenomenon. Well, I know that in high school in North San Diego County, it was sort of, we thought it was sort of proprietary to us. But
interesting.
It could be that it has, you know, reached further. But
interesting.
Guy.
Got to trace the genesis of that.
Yeah.
Do some research.
Yeah, finally, some research, right? And
yeah.
I guess that speaks to some of the emails we got. Let me just say, Scott Bass here, former editor, online editor, editorial director for Surfer Magazine, and now the producer and creator of the Boardroom Surfboard Show, and my diligent co-host.
David Scales. I have a podcast called Surf Splendor. So that's surfsplendorpodcast.com if you want to check that out. Scott and I simulcast this show. So yeah, teaming up to bring our two podcasts together.
Yeah, it's February 18th, 2014. We're a couple of weeks away from the first WCT event on the ASP and a lot of other, you know, stuff on the agenda.
Where are we at right now,
Scott? We are broadcasting live from the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center here in beautiful San Clemente. If you haven't had a chance to come by, say hi to Barry Hahn, the curator here. Buy him lunch. I'm sure he's hungry. And come check out all the surfboards and all the cool stuff here. It's a treasure trove and of the Smithsonian of surf culture, if you will.
It is, and we're actually in a different room today, so there might be a little bit more echo for the listeners, but it might actually work better, too. Who knows?
Yeah.
test it out.
We will see.
So, dude, what have you been up to since we last got together? Did you surf today? Or?
Yeah, I've been surfing a little bit. And
Did you guys have waves down here today?
You know, there's some little fun little waves down in San Diego. Yeah.
There's a bit more swell up in Orange County today, Huntington Beach. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, you know, I've been sort of, I don't know, I've been having a hard time going surfing lately.
Why is that?
And I'm not sure why. I've been trying to figure it out. I'm not sure if it's like an aging thing or I just don't have that surf stoke. It could be that we had such great waves for those 2 weeks about, right? And then it's kind of been crappy again. It kind of went back to not just good, but just crappy, you know, small and cold. And
you're just talking about like a lack of motivation.
Yeah, some malaise has overcome me.
It's the middle of winter, it's cold, you know?
And crappy.
It's hard to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
Do you have external stressors in your life, Scott, that you want to talk about?
I always have external stressors, but
would that prevent you from surfing, though?
Usually it wouldn't.
Okay.
You know, but it sort of brings me to the first topic that I want to talk about, which is, I don't know if you know Jason Bort, but he's a great writer, a great surfer, a guy who, he wrote one of Kelly Slater's biographies.
Pipe Dreams.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And he's an all-around good guy. Father, you know, husband, all of those things, right?
Right.
And as I mentioned, a great surfer. Well, he's got a great blog. I think it's How Surfing Ruined My Life, I believe, is the name of his blog. But if you just Google Jason Bort's blog.
Or go to downthelineradio.com, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, we'll have it on there. We'll have it on downthelineradio.com. I'm sure you'll have it on Surf Splendor as a link. But, you know, at the beginning of 2014, Jason Bort basically said, you know what, for this year, I'm going to quit surfing. You know, like, surfing has been such a big part of my identity, of who I am, of the it has had a major role in the decisions I make in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jason's sort of, you know, I don't know how old he is. I want to say he's mid-40s or early 40s, maybe late 30s, something like that. And, he's sort of at that place where he's like, you know what? I'm just going to take the year off. I'm not going to paddle out. I'm not going to catch a wave. I'm not going to ride a wave. I'm going to see what this is all about, because every decision basically, you know, since age 12 has been based on, is it good for my surfing? Is it going to benefit me as a surfer? And I really relate to some of the stuff that he's talking about, some of these issues that he's bringing up. You know, like, has surfing ruined our life? You know, is it an addiction, an affliction? At what point? You know, for instance, I would love to live, I think, in Idaho. I don't know why. I just think Idaho's probably beautiful. You know, I've read about it. People have told me about the Coeur d'Alene mountain range. I will never live in Idaho because I'm a surfer.
Totally.
And that's a great example of, you know, surf affliction.
Yeah.
You know, where we go on vacation.
Totally.
Where we went to college.
Okay, so let me ask you a couple questions related, because I haven't actually read Jason's blog. I just learned about it right now. The title is How Surfing Ruined My Life. So that the assumption would be that he's unhappy with the position in life that he's in, unless it's just a gimmicky title, which...
Well, I think what it is he really wants to see if he can go a year. Like, this is... like a true, you know,
right, but you wouldn't,
addiction type thing.
You wouldn't commit to taking a year off something unless it had negative consequence in your life, right? Like, if you're just loving it, like, Slater's not going to take a year off surfing. He's loving it. He's making money. He's having a great time surfing.
Yeah, I think the title's a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
But I do think that he is sort of examining it the way we just described.
Yeah,
like, you know what, can I do this? Every decision's been made based on this. Is this really who I am? Am I really... Jason Bort the surfer, or am I Jason Bort the father, the husband, the son? Am I Scott Bass? Am I David Scales the human? Or do I so self-identify that it's taking away from other aspects that I don't even know about? Like, for instance, this is silly. And, you know, my wife is always like, let's go to the Grand Canyon. Well, for some reason, I have an aversion to going to the Grand Canyon. I bet if I went to the Grand Canyon, I would absolutely love the Grand Canyon.
Totally.
I'm sure I would. I'm sure it would be filled with... you know, spiritual awareness and an incredible place, and you know, and quite frankly, I'm using that as a bit of an extreme example, because I would go to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
today.
I recommend it.
But in the past, I would be like, I'm not spending my 2 weeks or 1 week in the Grand Canyon. I only get 2 weeks of vacation.
And imagine if swell hit while you were gone. Oh, you'd be so pissed.
It would ruin my trip to the Grand
miserable.
Canyon.
Miserable.
So that's sort of an example. And I think Jason's just throwing it out there. And it's based on, there's a pretty good article written by Brad Malekian in one of the Surfers journals about these elder statesmen, and not even elder statesmen, middle-aged guys that just quit surfing, that just stop surfing, that just like turn it over and let go of it, you know? And I find that fascinating. I find the concept of letting go of this persona, letting go, it sounds quite liberating, you know? It sounds like freeing, you know?
It does, and I like it, and I'm going to follow it, and I'm really intrigued by it. But I also think that everybody has a different personality type, obviously, and some people go extreme one way and then replace that habit with, they give that up and then replace it with karate, you know, or whatever it happens to be. So I have friends, really close friends actually, who surf 5 times more than I do, and they have a very singular focus in their life, and that is surfing. And I'm more kind of measured and middle of the road, and I really enjoy surfing, and it's a big part of my life, both in the water and outside the water in my work, but I'm really into wine, and I'm really into music, and I'm really into film, and I'm really into these other things that I can't relate to those people on that level. They have no interest in those things, but I feel like I'm fairly well-rounded, you know what I mean? And to give surfing up, it's like I would never want to be an alcoholic because I'd have to give up wine completely. I'd rather just keep it in moderation so I can enjoy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the next 50 years or whatever.
Right.
So the same thing kind of goes with surfing. I don't want it to get to that point where I would have to give it up to make this extreme measure to define that to myself. And maybe he'll come out of the year and have more clarity and be like, oh, okay, I need to put it in balance and only surf 3 days a week or whatever it is. But I don't want to get to the point where I need to make that leap, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe I'm a younger dude, and that might happen to me in 10 years.
That's
what I
would suggest to you, that I think that, look, at some point we all stop surfing, you know, whatever age it is. You know, like there's guys that work here at this surfing museum that don't surf anymore that were legendary surfers back in the day, you know, like icons of the industry, if you will. And age is a big part of it,
right?
You know, and it's funny, you know, I've just been sort of wondering about it. You know, it was always a scary idea. Like the idea, like, I mean, when you're a kid, you're like, I'm going to surf forever, you know?
Totally.
And that's ingrained in me. And then to have this, all of a sudden to not have a pull towards, you know, frankly, it's been really crowded. I'm getting
that's
to that
tough.
Place too where
yeah.
I'm kind of, I used to do battle and I'm kind of sick of doing battle.
Totally.
I'm too old to do battle. I mean, there's just 75, 22-year-old, D-list pro surfer wannabes that are just out there scrambling. And I used to put on the helmet and go do battle. And I'm just kind of sick of doing battle, you know? And that
I feel
sort
the
of
same
puts
way.
A hamper on it.
It really does. Yeah, no, I've kind of gotten to the point as well where I'm incredibly picky about when I surf. You know, it's like tide needs to be just so, needs to be just enough swell. The wind can't be whatever, water temperature, too many guys out. And then I find myself in this tiny pigeonhole where now I'm only going to surf a couple days a week.
In Puerto Rico.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I think that that's okay too. I think that you taking time off surfing, when I've done that, you come back and you feel refreshed. You know, oftentimes you enjoy it more. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I hear you. I've gone through that, you know?
Yeah. You know, you brought up something really interesting to me too, which is, like, for instance, this morning, I paddled out at dawn this morning. I thought there was going to be waves. I woke up, I've been up since 4:30, stretching, getting ready to go surfing this morning. And I paddle out at the local little reef there in front where I surf. And it's just me and three guys, or two guys. And it's perfect, because it's not that great, but it's the perfect crowd, you know. But within 45 minutes or so, there was 15 guys. And this is a type of spot that it's just one takeoff zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not spread out. And I just thought to myself, I just don't want to do battle. So I paddled down to some crappy walled-off sandbar, you know.
Yeah.
And it just kind of got me thinking, you know, like, You know, maybe, you know, anyway, it'll be interesting to see how Jason Bort does. I do know this.
Yeah.
That he's already struggling with it. When you read his blog, you'll see that, you know, the waves have been all-time best ever on the East Coast. It's been bitterly cold and snowy, but the form and the quality of the waves have been really, really good. And so, you know, he's sort of basically saying, look, I'm taking one for the team. Wouldn't you know it, the year I take off is the best year ever. You guys all owe me one, you know?
Yeah, but I haven't read his thing, but I'm thinking if you're going to give something up, you might want to go cold turkey and stop checking the Surfline cams. Well, that'd be like,
I think he lives in Virginia Beach. I believe he's right there. It's kind of like you not looking at the ocean, you know, you just,
yeah, but you know, you don't want to give up alcohol and then like
drink near beer
or yeah. And then just go to the bar and like watch everybody else drinking. You got to just like distance yourself completely. You know what I mean?
You know what they say? Non-alcoholic beers for non-alcoholics.
I think one thing that you just brought up though that reminded me of a theme that kind of presents itself every once in a while that we never really talk about is going surfing to, you know, as therapy, let's say. That's kind of part of the purpose of it in your daily life. But then once you get out there, you start applying you start negotiating with the ocean, and it's like, well, now there's 15 guys out, so I'm gonna go down here. And like, oh, well, now this is a walled up sandbar, so now I'm not happy here. And then you end up coming in from the experience frustrated. And it's like, that was completely contradictory to the reason why I went out here. And then, of course, it makes it harder to get motivated to go out next time. It's like, I'm wondering.
This exactly what you described happened to me this morning.
As you explained it, that's kind of what I was thinking.
And I found myself, I literally paddled like 200 yards down to this other sandbar, hoping there was a good bar down there. It was walled off. I paddled back to this peak with these 15. Now there's 20 guys.
Now you're extra pissed from paddling.
But during the paddle back, I found myself saying, look, I need to have some gratitude here. Like, this is still pretty fascinating. Yeah. This is still really beautiful, you know? And I found myself kind of doing a gratitude list, kind of going, you know what, this is... No one else gets there. You know, if you were in Atlanta, you wish you were doing this right now.
Totally. If you were at home on the couch, you'd wish you were doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
And for sure, you know, plus, you know, sort of a side note, when you get to be middle 40s, you have to stay in the water just to stay in shape.
Totally.
So I was kind of thinking that, you know, I was kind of going, well, I'm paddling. That's good that I'm paddling, you know. And then I started to question, I sincerely was thinking, you know what? These stand-up paddleboarders sure look like they're having fun.
And that's okay, too.
I might have to go and get my stand-up paddleboard and try that out again.
The fact that you...
That's blasphemous, quite frankly.
Well, the fact that you just...
Although I enjoy it.
The fact that you just said, I have to go get my stand-up paddle proves you already own one and you've done this in the past, so you're not that far off.
Oh, well, if you don't... I'm not sure if you know my stand-up paddle history.
No, I don't.
Well...
I know you're into it.
At the risk of sound of boasting.
Or jeopardizing your credibility on this show.
I don't have any credibility, okay. So there's nothing to jeopardize. But I was one of the, you know, very first stand-up paddleboarders in California. I was doing it before there was an industry, before it was called supping.
Right.
I was, you know, ordering wooden paddles from British Columbia from some outrigger canoe kayak guy, and he was going, are you sure you want an 80-inch paddle? I've never made one this long before, you know. And so I have a pretty deep connection with it.
Yeah.
And I totally understand it. You know,
yeah.
And I get why it's fun. I mean, you're constantly moving.
Yeah.
And you're above the water, and you're looking down at everything, and there's a lot of upside to it.
Totally.
You know what I mean? To me, it just got boring, the actual riding of the wave on the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like, really? How many bottom turns can I do? You know,
right.
I would like to... At this point, you know, plus I found it limiting as far as the performance dance aspect.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you don't get to kind of throw your mojo into your hand movements and stuff. You're sort of, you know, you've got this thing in your hand and it sort of limits the way you express yourself on the wave. And the things are so thick, it's just simply not sensitive.
Yeah. There's a time and a place for it, obviously.
Yeah.
So today might have been that day. But you're right, in terms of the gratitude thing, like... Just being, how many amazing sunrises have you seen from the ocean's, you know, vantage point? Kind of.
Here's
that.
The thing: the sunrises are always better when the waves are good.
They are, but they're better than not experiencing them at all. You know what I mean?
I know.
Sunsets, and so
of course,
when you kind of reset, let go of that frustration, and just like, man, I'm in the water. watching the sunrise, this is not that bad, you know? So, but it's hard to reset when you're in that mood. I actually, the reason why I related to it was because I had a little bit of that this morning too.
Yeah.
Where I just kind of had to reset and just go, okay, just get a wave, do a turn, and like, you'll be fine, you know? And so it's tough.
What do you got? What's next?
There's a couple things. I just noticed in the last 48 hours, like a bunch of pro surfers in crossover media that's just kind of come about that I just thought we don't need to, you know, talk about it at length, but it's worth mentioning. Anastasia Ashley is in the new Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Did you see that?
No, I have not seen that.
Dude, just landed last night late. It's insane. And she's pretty much naked.
Oh my God.
Like, not showing anything below the waist, but she's showing nipples. Mm. And Stab Magazine posted it. I'll post a link to it. But I just thought that was pretty, that's mainstream, you know? Bethany Hamilton, to go a completely different direction, Bethany Hamilton spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast this past week.
I saw that.
Alongside President Obama.
Yeah.
So that's huge, mainstream.
Yeah.
Golf Digest magazine did a feature about pro surfers who are into golf. Kelly Slater is the most notable.
Yeah.
He's got like a 2 handicap.
Yeah.
Julian Wilson's not far behind him. Dusty Payne is super into it. Even the young Grom, Kanoa Igarashi, hangs with Slater, so he's on the golf course a lot. So I thought that was interesting. They devoted a couple pages to that.
The sort of the tie in there is, you know, Benji Weatherly caddied when the tour was in Hawaii this year for Adam Scott. Was it Adam Scott?
It was.
Adam Scott, who I want to say won the Masters last year.
Yeah.
So Benji got, and they got some play. I actually am a big golf fan. And
yeah.
I watched the Golf Channel, and they did a lot of interviews with Benji and Adam, and they interviewed Kelly on the course, who came out to support both of those guys. And
I think Adam Scott surfs.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the tie-in.
He does, for sure. And look, golf is a huge thing. Like, I know more surfers that golf than surfers that don't golf that are really into it. It's sort of like the two hardest sports in the world.
Totally.
It makes sense that we would, try to conquer both.
And the two that you're really competing against yourself in, and also that both those sports, I think, on a deeper level, represent a lot of metaphor for life and life's challenges and struggles and kind of the release of tension and just kind of letting, you know, all those things
relate.
Yeah,
there's a lot of Zen qualities in both of them that you have to do them well. You sort of need to almost be outside of yourself.
Yes.
And of course, then there's the outdoors aspect, right?
I mean, totally.
You know, you're in beautiful places generally in both situations. And
the other notable crossover, Shane Dorian on the cover of South Pacific Bowhunter magazine.
Are you a subscriber?
Yeah, I'm super into bow hunting in Huntington Beach, dude.
Wow.
No, but still, that's something that he's super into, and he travels to Colorado and elsewhere to actually go participate. So
that's cool.
Yeah, really weird stuff, but
Ted,
cool, you know?
Ted Nugent. Maybe, you know, he can hook up with Ted Nugent.
Probably has. I saw Keala Kenley actually did a TED Talk.
Oh, yeah?
Did you see that?
I'm not sure if I saw that or not.
So that was super crossover, you know?
Yeah,
strange, but cool.
Yeah, good stuff, you know? I guess the next thing on my list here is, because it's the Olympics, where we've got Sochi happening, couple things. First, this morning on Facebook, Sal Masekela found a surfer in Sochi, a Russian guy. Did you happen to see this?
I saw your post of it.
Yeah. So he found this guy that's a hardcore surfer that makes his own surfboards in Russia by like finding container foam and cutting them with a hacksaw and who knows, finding some Cold War resin and mixing it up and making his own boards, making fins out of wood. And now he's getting boards, you know, from, you know, more, I don't know, contemporary means, I guess.
But, or getting blanks, at least. Is he getting boards,
I'm
too?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know, but the good news is that Sal found this guy, or this guy found Sal. Sal's a hardcore surfer, and they're going to go surfing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, today or something. And Sal's got a friend for life and vice versa, and I found that to be sort of neat.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I hope Sal's documenting it.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure we'll see more soon on Facebook.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know what I mean, who knows? Are there waves?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, never, obviously. What yeah, if, I mean, am I like out of the loop with Sochi?
Well, I mean,
surf
I would
culture?
Assume there is.
Well, if there's only one guy.
Well, Sal posted photos of the Black Sea at Sochi. There's
oh,
windswell.
Really?
There's all these jetties. And
okay.
He posted photos when he landed about, you know, 2 weeks ago at the airport there that there's photos, you know, nice jetty waves, windswell waves.
Hmm. I guess I
maybe this guy knows the secret spots, you know.
Dude, could you imagine if you actually were good at surfing and had that spot all to yourself or that place all to yourself?
Yeah.
Be a dreamland. Yeah. You'd be pissed at Sal for showing up and blowing it up.
You might be.
But I guess I don't follow Sal. Maybe I should, because I didn't see any of that stuff.
Well, the other Olympic thing is I also found this on Jason Bort's site, but I found it to be real timely, you know. And we've talked about it before, surfing in the Olympics, you know. Is this a good idea, David? My question to you, surfing in the Olympics, yes or no?
I'm a little bit on the fence, but leaning towards the no side. I think that it is so subjective and so hard to quantify in terms of scoring, and we've really tried to, and we have varying degrees of success depending on the event and the style of waves. But I think that there's too many inconsistent variables with the surf spots, for example, that it'd be really hard to give the same legitimacy to the scoring and to the judging of it that you can give to swimming, let's say, or hockey, you know? That's my main concern.
You know, imagine this. You've got this wave pool. There would obviously have to be wave pools. So you've got this real artificial setting, and on top of that, you're going to have like McDonald's, you know, and just these massive corporate brands kind of putting their stamp on it. And the whole competitive arena is relatively artificial, especially in relation to what you and I as surfers experience every day, right? You know, there's no way they're going to be able to mimic the randomness of the ocean and all that comes with it, you know, the landscape and everything, right? So from the competitive aspect of it, I don't really care. And it would be kind of a bummer because what you could anticipate is a bunch of flyweights just punting airs in some wave pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounds monotonous. You know, you're going to basically get it's basically going to be skateboarding or the snowboard half pipe or
right.
whatever, you know what I mean? And so that part of it, I'm sort of like, whatever. I don't care either way. I don't know if
yeah.
I would be like drawn to watch it maybe initially just as a, you know, just to check it out, right? But my thing on it is look, you're going to have 85 countries that have, that are, you know, going to be, have Olympic surf teams, or at least you have to have a certain amount of countries to even get a chance to get a foot in the door with the Olympics. And I think right now the ISA has like 75 countries that have Olympic surfing programs, right? And so my feeling, and this might be naive and it might be ignorant, and I've been told as much already, but if you have 85 countries that are fielding surfing teams, that means you have a lot of power players, a lot of power brokers, a lot of influential decision makers within each country that are for surfing. And I've spoken with Fernando Aguirre, the ISA. It's his vision to get surfing into the Olympics. And he lives and breathes it every day. That's what
right.
his purpose is. And he's spoken to me about, you know, meeting really influential heads of state who are into surfing, or whose wife loves the idea of going to Tahiti and going to Hawaii and loves the surf lifestyle. And they have children that love it. And I think the Prince of Monaco likes to surf, you know. And so my feeling is, if you have all of these major decision makers who have an interest in the idea of surfing, and therefore by just natural proxy have an interest in the ocean, I see it as a plus for the healing and the health and the awareness of the oceans of the world if surfing's in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the naysayers, to my opinion, have said, look, has it helped climbing, or has it helped the alpine sports at all? You know, is it just a big money grab, greed, 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 more surfers, not cool, bad idea. Just leave it to us. We don't want them involved anyway. There's a lot of negatives to my opinion, but I just, and again, maybe I'm naive, but the big 30,000 foot level, you've got more surfers in the world. That's got to be good for the health of the oceans.
I don't know. I that might be the case. I wouldn't necessarily leap to that conclusion. There's probably arguments against it. You presented a couple. I think if surfing's in the Olympics, it doesn't affect my personal surfing experience. So I'm not really going to like fight it, you know?
Yeah.
But I also think that we shouldn't bring it into the Olympics for those reasons that you presented. If those are benefits that we get from it, then that'd be great. But look, if we have to engineer a wave pool to make this happen, then I feel like that's a little bit forced. And if we then do that and the environment is so sterile and so like not even related to what the real experience is, then what are we doing it for in the first place? We're only doing it to achieve these other goals that you just presented of, well, let's bring ocean awareness, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that it's bringing ocean awareness. It's bringing chlorinated wave pool awareness now because it's such a removed thing. Yeah, it's tangentially related. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's definitely the argument against when I presented it.
I just feel like if the need for surfing in the Olympics grew organically out of, look, we're all doing this thing and this group of people that's participating in this thing needs a world format to contend on and prove who is the best, who's the superior country, cool, let's do it in the Olympics. But if it's just like, hey, we love doing this, and then there's this other organization that maybe we can go and get involved in and cash in on and bring in mainstream sponsors and do all this other stuff, I feel like that's kind of a far gap, you know, or chasm to cross. It's not organic.
And I think the other argument sort of against what I proposed is, look, can't we get ocean awareness another way? Well, like, is that really the only way? And again, my thing is, look, we're going to have major heads of state involved in this on some level. And to have all these decision makers all of a sudden have to go, oh, but my son surfs and all these people surf. And what about the surf team? And they, you know, I know it's a leap. I know I'm probably naive. I just feel like more surfers in the world is better for the health of the oceans.
Yeah.
And if, you know, but again, maybe I'm wrong.
If that wave pool comes around that presents like an actual real opportunity to have contestable surfing in it, maybe I'll reconsider, you know, but that's not even here yet. So it's just, I don't know. I think we're putting the cart before the horse in a lot of different ways with that topic.
Yeah.
Did you see that the LA Times live broadcasted an interview with Paul Speaker and Courtney Conlogue and Jesse Miley Dyer talking about some big news that they were going to drop about the Women's World Tour?
I did, yeah.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it, no, but I did see the link and, you know, I read some of it online and stuff.
I thought it was really cool that they did that. It was like a 25-minute interview with those three people. And it was really a promotional thing for the ASP Women's World Tour.
Yeah.
Paul Speaker wanted to release some news,
Partnered
up with the LA Times, and let's live stream this thing. And then they also posted it on YouTube after. So I'll post a link to it on surfsplendorpodcast.com, and so you can watch it. But basically, Speaker had a couple main objectives when Zozy took over the ASP, and they want to roll out those objectives in 2014. The first thing he said is he wants the Women's World Tour to have equality with the men's tour. And they raised the prize money for the women in each event from $110,000 to $250,000, which is equivalent to the men's prize purse. The second thing that he mentioned is that they want to increase the quality of the waves that the women are riding. So, they included Honolulu Bay as the final stop of the tour.
Yeah.
And trestles they included, So lowers they'll be able to surf. Another detail is just like 5 out of the 10 events are going to be combined and simultaneously run with the men's events.
Yeah.
So the other 5 will just be, I think like the trestles event maybe it was, or the France event, like the men will cut, oh no, Fiji. the men will come in for 1 or 2 weeks, and then the women will show up the week after that and surf. So it won't run simultaneously. It'll run kind of consecutively.
Right.
So that you don't have to compete for the ideal windows of the day and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool.
So those are some details about that.
Well,
I have some questions about it for you, but do you have any thoughts on it before that?
Well, let me tell you this, and you may know this already, but the founding family of the Los Angeles Times are surfers. I forget their name right now. It starts with a C. I want to say like Chandler or something, but the patriarch of the LA Times, his son was a big surfer in the 50s and 60s. In fact, they've donated some funds to the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, where we're broadcasting wow. from now. And they were good friends with Hobie Alter, I okay. believe. So it doesn't surprise me that there's a tie-in there with the LA Times and yeah. surfing and pro surfing. And I know Paul Speaker is smart enough to know this. And,
sure.
And he probably knows this family. Is it the Chandlers? I forget.
I don't know.
But we could
yeah.
Google it. But anyway. Secondly, as you know, for the women's event, that tour used to end at Honolulu Bay.
Right.
And it was the Roxy Pro, I believe, or the Billabong Pro or whatever.
I don't remember.
It used to end there, and it hasn't for a few, five years, whatever it's
sure.
been. So that's a welcome, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. My question for you it was just a glaring question as I was watching this. The first thing I thought is his first statement, we want equality with the men's tour. My question is, do we need equality?
Well,
are the females equivalent surfers?
Here's the deal: what Paul Speaker and the ASP sees is they see a lot of money on the women's side of things from sponsors. They have people that want to give money and support women surfing. So the ASP needs to then go, they need to show that they're proud of their product, basically. And that's what they're saying. They're saying, you know what, we are proud of women surfing. Let's prove it by making it as equal to the men's side of things. Believe me, there is way more money out there, marketing dollars, for the women's side of things than there is for the men's side of things. I think you're going to see a ton of cash come in from random non-endemic sponsors like, give me a female product.
Revlon?
All of them.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Women buy things. You and I don't buy crap.
Right.
We go to the thrift store or we, borrow it from our buddy.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that women spend money. And so women's markets are valuable. Paul Speaker knows this. This has been his thing from day one. Not to mention, I want to say his wife or somebody else's wife is on the board, and she's a big surfer. And then they all have daughters who
right.
are big, like, fans of Stephanie Gilmore.
So that's
there's
what he mentioned.
There's a bunch of tie-in.
Well,
but the big factor here, the number one, the elephant in the room, is there's tons of dough there, and they need to attack it.
So when I say, do they deserve equality, I don't mean that they should be lesser than the males. I'm fully accepting and aware of the fact that they're probably more marketable than the males. And if they have $1 million prize purse because they're generating that much income and the men only have $250,000, I'm fully okay with that. Like, I'm on board to make money where you can make money.
Let the markets speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, like, to word it as equality sounds very archaic to me and very like backwards thinking. Like, we're not equals. We have very different body types. If it's equal, then why aren't the women ending at Pipeline like the men are? You know what I mean? Like, but I don't need the women to end at Pipeline. I don't need to see the girls go out there and get smashed. Like, I'd rather see them surf Honolulu Bay. It's much more entertaining and appealing. So I just don't think equality should be the goal of the ASP. And maybe you need to keep it PC and just say the right thing and play to the masses. But one of the things that Speaker said in relation to what you just... I mean, he basically said what you just said. He said that there's been a tremendous amount of pressure on the surf brands to carry the salaries of the competitors, which I think is really worth discussing. Like, basically, if you're a pro surfer and you're not supported by Quiksilver, Billabong, Hurley, Rip Curl, or O'Neill, then you're not making a living. And the ASP prize money isn't enough to help you make a living if you're traveling the world competing for that. So he was saying, you know, we need to diversify in the women's world, the women's surfing. There's a wider variety of brands who could benefit from sponsoring women. He used Revlon as an example, Procter & Gamble as an example. He said another key factor there is just the diversity in the women's surfing, the diversity in the marketing of the women. You have Alana Blanchard on one end, and now Anastasia Ashley in Sports Illustrated, you know, essentially marketing their butt in a G-string, and that has certain appeal. Sally Fitzgibbons, on the other hand, is running marathons and marketing her competitive prowess. You know what I mean? So those are very different things that represent.
She's equally as beautiful, too.
Totally.
Sally is,
but they represent something different to different corporate sponsors.
Yeah.
So that's what Speaker's point was like, hey, we can hit so many different targets with these girls that the men can't necessarily do,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's a great point. And I, it'll be interesting. I think that money will start coming in, if not this year, shortly thereafter, and we'll see that transition happen really quickly.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. It is an exciting time if you're a professional woman surfer.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And I do, I look at it like golf, you know, like, look, there's probably, you know, I don't know, 400, 500 guys trying to qualify for every event each week, you know, and it gets whittled down to a certain amount that, and of those, you know, maybe the top 20 get, you know, product and money, you know, maybe
right.
only five of them are making a salary, you know. So I think that's sort of the model or the paradigm that Speaker would love to see. You know, like, let's not have the brands have to bear the burden.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, let the ASP tour, if you do good, you get paid. If you don't do good, guess what? Back
yeah.
to the gas station or whatever,
yeah.
you know? And I, you know, that's sort of, I like the idea of that.
Well, that's a good segue. You said you had other ASP talk, right?
Well, I was on their site. I was just kind of randomly checking in with them, and I saw that they had a fantasy surfer game. You know, like Surfer Magazine and Grind Media has their fantasysurfer.com. Well, ASP has ASP Fantasy Surf, I think it is, right?
Surfing.
Surfing, okay. So it's basically the same, you know, it's a fantasy league, like CBS has theirs and ESPN has theirs. And so I'm interested to see how they're going to kind of compare, you know.
Did you log on to it?
I did. I fielded a team. I field a team on both.
Okay.
Fantasy Surfer and Fantasy Surfing,
okay.
ASPs. And we'll see how it goes, you know. There was
yeah.
a few glitches, but nothing that didn't, after a reload, that didn't
sure.
work itself out.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I saw that too, and I didn't log on yet, but I figured I'd mention it to you since I know you're super into it, and I'm into it too. But most importantly that I saw on the ASP thing was, did you see Lewis Samuel's power rankings?
No.
Oh my gosh, dude. So you know Lewis Samuel's of him.
He's a big hater. He's written some horrible stuff.
I've read them. Yeah. I thought they were spot on.
I've never met
on.
The guy, but he, no, you know, I'm just kidding. He doesn't, he's not a big fan.
No, he's a hater in general. That's his cup of tea, you know?
Yeah.
But let me backtrack for the listeners. Lewis Samuels has done a lot of writing for different publications in the surf world, but most notably, he had a blog called Post Surf, which I think is still online. He only ran it for less than a year, published on it for less than a year, but it still exists on the internet and you could find it. I think it's post-surf.com probably. But basically, he was just super provocative. Just write really oftentimes hateful things about whatever was going on in current surf news, you know, Laird Hamilton, and just bash Laird. Post a picture of Laird with his wife and then clown on his wife, you know, just pretty mean stuff. Said some less than nice things about our friend Scott Bass here. Any public figure, he would, you know, write about them. But I would also say that he's a really, really good and entertaining writer. And so he reintroduced the power rankings to Surfline at some point, which was a la like Derek Hind did that at Surfer in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so Lewis Samuels kind of reintroduced that, but spewed a lot of vitriol, but honestly spoke a lot of truth as well about surfers like Ben Dunn and Luke Stedman at that time, who he viewed as very vanilla and very bland, and said it outright. I guess Lewis got punched out once or twice by some of these guys, and there was a lot of anger and animosity against him. And so that was all very controversial back in the day, but it's all kind of, you know, gone away. And he's had some jobs writing for Surfer, but everything that he's put out kind of in the mainstream publications are more vanilla and not nearly as provocative. So I was shocked when I logged on to the ASP website, and that was their banner advertisement was Power Rankings for 2014 by Lewis Samuels. I was like, what? That's a bold move on the ASP's part, who I thought was trying to appeal to the masses and go middle of the road, not hire this guy. So I read it, and it was part one, basically. It was the back half of the tour, and it was going to be part two would then be the front half of the tour. So I read through part one, and it was awesome. Like, really well written, super on the money, not holding back any truth at all, just said it like it is, but again, really well written. That's the thing. Like, I'm not into just, you know, following the wannabe Dane Reynolds on Twitter that's just pure vitriol and not necessarily a lot of insight, you know? I mean, it is pretty entertaining. I still follow him, but like Lewis Samuels, there's a lot of brilliance to his writing as well. So anyways, I was super entertained by it, and I logged back onto it yesterday to prepare for today's show, and it's been taken down by the ASP. The link is no longer active.
Oh, somebody's got that content somewhere that's worth some money now.
I'm gonna dig a little bit deeper. I don't know why I didn't have the foresight to screenshot that stuff.
Yeah, somebody has.
Yeah. I commented on Lewis Samuels' Instagram when he advertised that that they had published it. I went back on last night, commented on there, and I'm like, hey, dude, what's up? Where did that go? Like, send me the scoop, you know? But I've reached out to him for an interview in the past. He never applied, so I doubt we'll hear anything. I would think that if they are trying to silence him, he's a guy who's not going to be silenced. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out and speaks his mind about it. And I hope he does. You know?
Yeah, you know, I agree. Lewis is a great writer. There's no doubt about it. It's unfortunate for guys like me and for Laird and for Paul Nade at Billabong. Lewis, unfortunately, it's kind of sad that he had to be so mean-spirited.
Correct.
But you know what? He got his name out there. Like, you know, it was a little bit like sophomoric, and it's you know, it was just too much hate, you know, and And it's sad because he's better than that, is the thing. You know what I mean? But I know he's not a big fan of mine. I've never met him. I don't know anything about him. I've reached out to him, and he didn't reach back, you know?
Were you personally offended by the things
he wrote? Oh, yeah. I mean,
really?
He's written stuff about me that will affect the way, you know, if I need to go get a job or something, you know, like...
You think it'll affect it?
Well, if people Google your name when you're...
Yeah.
You know, stuff comes up, and it's you know... I don't know if it will or it won't. It's not a positive thing, you know. But it's so over the top too that it's like it's kind of tongue in cheek almost.
Well, you gotta also realize you've arrived. You know what I mean? It's like
that's actually a great point because I don't even think I'm worthy of I'm not in that category.
Right.
Like, I don't know why he's attacking me. I know he wrote some stuff that I'm a horrible writer, that I'm like the worst writer ever or whatever. And quite frankly, there's probably some truth to that. I don't ever claim to be some great surf writer. I worked at Surfer Magazine and I got to travel all over the world and go surfing and it was great. And oh, by the way, I had some deadlines, you know, and you know, maybe it's on me that I didn't write as well or maybe as thoroughly I'm the first one to tell you, yeah, I winged it a lot,
yeah.
You know? But, you know, again, Lewis is a great writer and I know he's very entertaining. I know a lot of people enjoy reading him. I've enjoyed reading his stuff and it'll be cool to see. I'd like to see what he wrote. I'm bummed I missed it.
I am too. I think that... in regards to his writing, like when he was doing post-surf, if you're doing a blog that's updated regularly, you're producing a lot of content and therefore it's not going to be as well edited, you know, as if you wrote a book and spent years writing it. And so I feel like a lot of his writing on there was really sloppy and lazy, and it would be one every five posts that I actually thought had value. The other ones were just mean. So... you could say the same thing about him being a crappy writer, but this power rankings that he did was edited. It was clearly refined, and it wasn't just mean for the sake of being mean. It was pointing out flaws that we've noticed in certain people surfing, you know. But he does it so articulately that it was entertaining. But go ahead.
I think it's interesting that he's been punched out a few times. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I read it.
It doesn't surprise me. I'm sure he's pissed off more than Laird Hamilton.
It was an Australian surfer. I can't remember who it was. Just like a mid-tier, like regular foot kind of, you know, power surfer dude.
Right.
But whatever. I did think of some things, though, as I was last night kind of going through this, and I'd like to just go through them with you. I think that it's super important to have candid, smart writing and surfing,
yes.
And there's a glut of it, a really disproportionate glut for all the content that surf media puts out. There's a disproportionate glut of quality writing. I think that if there's any good writers who do work for the mainstream publications, we wouldn't know it because the mainstream publications won't publish their good writing.
Right, right.
You know, I think that The Surfer's Journal puts out quality writing.
Yeah.
But what I'm really looking for is something that is current, that's like a current commentary on surf news that is truthful and provocative. I think Twitter has a little bit of that. I think that What Youth and maybe Later Magazine or Monster Children has attempted it and have varying levels of success. I think Stab Magazine does an okay job with it. Certainly they've had really shining examples of it, but.
Well, they're all, you know, they're all eventually sort of, you know, biting the hand that feeds them. I mean.
But we need, and again.
I agree. I'm just saying that like, if you look at Sports Illustrated, when they write something provocative, say about like Richie Incognito, the Miami Dolphin bully guy, right?
Right.
Well, none of Richie Incognito's, people that pay Richie Incognito are paying ad dollars to Sports Illustrated, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you and I have talked about this. And therein lies the problem is that you can't lash out at endemic either athletes or brands and run an endemic marketing vehicle known as a surf magazine.
And we recognize that now, and I'm not faulting the magazines for not running
I think that Lewis Samuels would be an incredible broadcaster on the, like, he's the kind of cutting edge. Now, I don't know if the athletes would approve of him because he's not like a world champion and he hasn't been in, but he's the type of guy, he's got that kind of McEnroe, you know, edginess to him that he would be good if he is, you know, it's on. And there are guys out there like Brad Gerlach's sort of one that won't, you know, bite his tongue. That'll basically tell it like it is. And that's what the ASP needs to foster.
I think it's yet to emerge like this conscientious platform that's truly supports and cultivates quality, current, provocative writing. You know,
who's going to sponsor? Well, that's look the at thing.
Well, speakers talking about Revlon, Procter & Gamble, and all that kind of stuff coming in and sponsoring people. Maybe that's who it ends up becoming, is outside source. Let's put it this way: if you're getting 1 million views a month on your website, people will sponsor. We'll pay for advertising.
Yeah.
And we don't need it to be Quiksilver. We don't need it to be Hurley. But
yeah, but in the past, if you wrote something negative about Quiksilver or Hurley or one of their writers, you'd get a call and they'd be like, take that down or I'm pulling my advertising. So if you do that now with Revlon or Procter & Gamble, I mean, the very first article is going to be, can you believe Revlon's in the surf space? How lame. And you know what I mean? That's going to be the chant for years.
That's a good point. That could present itself. But I think Matt... One person that's worth noting in terms of being a quality writer is Matt Warshaw and what he's done with the Encyclopedia of Surfing, the book, and the .com. But his style of writing is historical writing. You know, it's not really what I'm looking for, but he's worth noting. But he actually did an interview with Art Brewer this week, the photographer. And basically Art talked about, one of the things he talked about was the sport being sold out, quote unquote. And he talked about how a quality photo used to have value, but now quality photos are a dime a dozen in your Instagram feed. And they are quality photos. Amazing imagery, perfectly lit, perfectly composed, but very few have meaningful impact. He says that Laird's Millennium Wave, that we all remember, was the last surf photo that really impacted surfing. And I mean, that's arguable. I think
that's an interesting insight. I agree. I would, as I think on that now, I think that there's a lot of validity to that.
I think
that image being the last. I'm trying to think of another one since then that makes me go, wow.
Yeah, I can't.
What's
think
the other image? You know, so I'm thinking, like, is there a Greg Long photo? Or like, you see so many big wave photos these days, they're a dime a dozen.
That's what he was saying, and I think he has a point. And surf content.
You think of another photo?
No.
Since the Laird wave, I'm trying to think of another photo that makes me go, wow.
No. I can't. He's right with photography, but I think in general, surf content has become rapid fire and homogenized, and it's infinitely less satisfying than it once was.
You know? There's just so much of it.
Yeah, see, exactly.
That's the problem, right? I mean,
totally.
If we only got one magazine in the mailbox every month, it would just be so much more grand and
robust. But I think that my point is that I think the solution, or a possible solution to that,
yes,
is writing could be the answer. You know what I mean? Like having a current...
That's the one thing that's missing. We have tons of great imagery. We have tons of great videos. We have tons of great athletes. We have all the great brands. We have incredible surf spots. We have travel. We have shitty writing.
Totally. And a block on any good writing that comes up. Bravo to the ASP for hiring.
Chaz Smith, Lewis Samuels. Those guys should start their own mag.
Bravo to the ASP for hiring Lewis Samuels, but shame on them for firing him. You know what
Did
I mean?
Did you read any of it?
I read all of it.
Was it vitriolic or
it was?
Is that a word? Did I say that right?
It probably is. It was truthful. It wasn't as mean
was
as
it, the was things, there malice?
Not for the sake of malice. There was pointing out obvious flaws in B. Derbich's, you know, repertoire. Obvious blandness in his surfing. But right. It wasn't, and I honestly, the reason why I went back last night was to pull quotes, because I remember reading Alejo Muñiz's write-up and going, I've thought that all along, and I've never actually been able to articulate it. Man, I'm going to steal this line and talk about it during the show because it's so well articulated. And it is...
Who's Alejo Muñiz?
Right. It's critical, and it's truthful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's okay. You can be constructively criticizing. Yeah.
So, I think the problem is that, and it might be the problem, is that it's one thing if it comes from John McEnroe or from Johnny Miller or from somebody that's been at the top of the game. And it's not to say that you or I or Lewis or Chaz or any writer can't discern and decipher and see all of these things and be able to elaborate on them,
right?
You know, and do a good job of writing about it. It's just that because we don't have those experiences in the championship level, it's a little bit harder to you just sort of need to have that cachet. I think
it's harder to swallow, but it doesn't.
I agree. I'm not saying it's not totally true. Yeah. I'm just saying that wouldn't it be neat if they could get somebody that, and I think Barton Lynch is kind of, but they're all in the game though. That's the
and
problem.
They're all sponsored.
That's what I mean.
They're all by Hurley.
Yeah.
Commenting Hurley events. So yeah. I disagree. I think that the skill set.
Well, I'm just wondering why they pulled it. Like if it was written by Rabbit Bartholomew. Well, maybe it wouldn't have the same spark and attitude, but
I think
if it did, would they have pulled it?
Yeah, I think the
and
ASP.
Who greenlighted it and who got fired for greenlighting
it? I honestly said bravo to the ASP when I saw that they did this because I was like.
Who's the guy? Dave Proden, right? He's the North American sort of PR guy. I'm wondering if he's the editorial guy.
All I know is I said bravo to them because. Wow, they're really taking a bold move. They're going to do something meaningful with this. This has meaning to me. And then when they backpedaled it, I was like, oh my gosh.
Got like a slander or a libel threat or something like that. You know, yeah, maybe one like Alejo Muniz's lawyer called him and said, hey man, take that down right now or I'm going to sue you.
Yeah.
Could have been that because I can't imagine that it got to publishing, that it got all the way to being posted online without everyone combing through it really kind of, thoroughly and going, look, we know Lewis is a spark plug, but this is good. We've got to run with it. Are we all behind this? Yes, we are. Let's do it. It almost sounds like a lawyer must have called or something.
Yeah. Well, if anybody has insight into this, please get a hold of us. I would love to know more. My email address is hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com or social media @surfsplendor. But I also think if anybody has maybe screenshots of it or knows, send that stuff to us too.
I'm sure. I bet if you go to the guys at the Surfer Magazine Forum are pretty brutal.
Okay.
I'm sure those
guys. Let's get to the bottom of this, dude.
I'm sure they've got screenshots of it somewhere. Or, who knows? I'm sure Lewis has probably sent it to somebody and they have it.
Yeah.
It's going to get anonymously posted somewhere.
Yeah. We got to stay on track because I know you got appointments.
Yeah.
I've got a couple more things, but what do you want to prioritize?
Let's see. Oh, well, I've got a must watch TV and I've got a best song ever.
Well, that'll close us out, but we still got time. Let's go.
That's all on my thing. So
okay.
I'll run with what you got.
Well, Kelly won the Vulcan Pipe Pro.
Right.
Which he did it in astounding form.
Yes.
Dominating form.
We didn't talk about this yet?
We talked about the event, but I think they had one more day to run when we last had our show. So he won, and it was just we can't say enough about Kelly.
You just can't say enough. If you saw it, you're in awe, and that doesn't even do it's almost like I'm speechless.
Okay.
I'm completely speechless. That's how dominating his performance was.
And you've all seen it. You've seen the imagery, and so we don't need to beat that to death, but I'm going to pick a direction that I do want to talk about that maybe you can provide insight on, which is Kelly Slater's bat tail. Have you seen the boards he was riding?
Yeah.
So I kind of had awareness of the bat tail design peripherally. Like I've never ridden one. I probably haven't even seen one in real life, but I knew it existed. And then Kelly started posting photos on Instagram about the bat tail. And he made a quiver of boards and then won contests on them at Pipeline and stuff. And he commented on it a lot. I think he posted multiple Instagrams. I did some research and read something that Rusty Preissendorfer wrote about him. He said that he's been working with him in the early 80s. I don't think consistently since then, but he worked with them in the 80s. And he said that they're all the rage for quads. The area removed and the little corners add some bite and help give the boards without a rear fin in the middle a little bit of extra drive. So you get the quad speed, but you get the drive out of that tail shape. Do you have any insight into the design or what the benefits and pros and cons are?
Yeah, first, Rusty knows more than I do. And quite frankly, Kelly probably does too.
Oh, for sure.
But I do know that historically, look, the bat tail's been around for a long, long time. I know Jeff Alexander in Del Mar in the late 70s was making them. And they've, you know, come, you know, as far as Kelly using it, you know, I just think it's a good thing for a surfboard designer, for surfers in general. When Kelly goes a certain yes. way, it's important. And yeah, I think that, as I recall, he was talking about it on the webcast, and the extra rail gives him a little bit of a little wider tail, but allowing him to have the pin, the rounded pin as well. So he's got that pulled in feeling, but with width for speed.
So what does that do on the wave? Can you explain the effect?
Well, width is going to give you more planing area. So okay. you're going to be able to turn like a quicker arc.
Okay.
And the pulled in round pin part of it just lets you ride higher on the wave face. So it's sort of like, can I get the best of both worlds? Generally speaking, I've found that, you know, it's hard to get the best of both worlds with surfboard design. You know, we're always trying to find the fine middle ground, you know, like I want a tri-fin that surfs like a quad, so I'm going to make this. But it's generally, look, you should, my feeling is, personally, I'm either going to ride a tri-fin or I'm going to ride a fish. And to try to get something in the middle, I lose the best of both boards.
Yeah, well, then you end up with a quiver of 20 boards for different days of the week and different surf spots. I think also it's important to keep in mind with board design is that no one design element exists in isolation. You know what I mean? There's bottom contours involved to even get it to that point in the tail and fin setup and all these other things.
I'm looking at Kelly's right now on Instagram, and it reminds me a lot of Will Jobson does a lot of this on his Twinsers. It looks like a Will Jobson tail.
Okay.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's interesting about Kelly's bat tail, to explain to the listeners maybe who haven't seen it, the other bat tails that I was looking at online, let's call them traditional.
Look how clean this guy's shaping bay is. It thing's spotless.
That's Al Merrick, obviously.
I don't know if it's
I'm just joking.
It's not Al Merrick.
I know, I'm joking.
It's got his name on it, though.
So, but traditional bat tails are different than what Kelly Slater actually is riding.
Yeah.
So the traditional bat tail, for the listeners, there's two outside points, like a swallow tail. And then it kind of curves in towards the center stringer from there into like two half moons, basically, until they meet where the center stringer forms kind of a third point. So it's like almost like a W shape, not Kelly's. I'm talking about traditional ones.
Yeah.
Kelly's, on the other hand, that W shape is inverted. So there's the two outside points of the swallowtail, and there's a central point that they meet in. But to get there, they go down diagonally and then curve upward to create basically a rounded pin in the middle.
Yeah.
So that rounded pin in the middle with the two swallows on the outside, whereas traditional bat tails, it's rounded inward. There's no sharp V at the bottom of the W. It's a rounded W. So how is Kelly's different or performed differently than the traditional bat tail is the question.
You know, it's kind of hard to convey that over an audio. You know, I think that the traditional more W style bat tail is going to give you a little bit more bite because you've got almost 3 points.
Right.
You do have 3 points.
Right.
And so, you know, this is probably just not going to have quite as much bite and have a little bit more flow in the top of the turn, like through the turn.
Mm-hmm.
More, you know, like, how would I say that? Just it wants to come through the turn a little bit better, you know?
Yeah.
Easier,
does
smoother.
Anybody know? I mean, if it's a new tail design, I've never even seen that. He's calling it a bat tail, but it's not really traditional bat tail, you know?
Yeah, it's like a rounded bat tail.
With little wings on the side, too. But
yeah,
or little
board.
Bumps.
It's a cool board.
Anyways, I noticed in that event, Adriano was riding Channel Islands boards, which he made the final of the Vulcan Pipe Pro.
Yeah.
And then he just won the Australian Open of Surfing,
yeah.
also riding Channel Islands boards.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the reason why he's been doing well, but that's worth noting, you know?
Well, I mean, Adriano's been doing well forever. I'm sure the change to Channel Islands has helped him a lot. There's no denying that Channel Islands makes incredible surfboards. But there are a lot of incredible surfboards. They just have the marketing power and the manpower, and they've dedicated themselves to, you know, stocking the high level, high end professional surfer with their equipment. And
right.
They've done a great job, and my hat's off to the Channel Islands for doing it.
Totally.
And,
For doing incredible R&D.
Adriano, I think Adriano's on both my fantasy teams. I see him doing big things. He's been on tour for a long time.
Let's talk about six years or so. Let's talk about Adriano, dude.
I mean, look, I'm the last guy to want to put a Brazilian in and pimp a Brazilian, basically. Not that I'm anti-Brazilian, but I'm pro-U.S. North American surfer. I want Brett Simpson to win, you know, and, you know, I want the North American, I want Kelly Slater, let's be blunt, right? You know, I want the Hobgoods.
Well, let me ask you this. If it was Adriano versus Miguel Pupo in a heat, who would you be rooting
for? Well, it all depends. Oh, who would I be rooting
for? Yeah, who do you want to see win in that exchange?
I guess Adriano, but oh, I can really? See what you mean. Like, I mean, if I didn't have him on my team, I might want Miguel Pupo.
Right. I think Adriano, to me, is my least favorite. Like, one of my least favorite surfers.
He's pretty – I'm not saying he's my favorite surfer. I just think that he's competitively primed to have a big season. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. So let me present
– I don't want my son to surf like him.
No. Let me present a scenario to you because I spent a lot of time thinking about this because he made the final of the Australian Open with Julian. And I love Julian, and he's so appealing to the eye, you know? And I'm like, Adriano, I can't believe he even made the final. He deserved to make the final. He was ripping. You know, it's undeniable.
He's just a little bit formulaic and robotic and just a little square.
Here's my question, though. When you break down his surfing, I should love him. You know, like, he does incredible airs. He does incredible turns. He does, most importantly, incredible bottom turns. He's got a rags-to-riches story. He's got grit, determination, like power, workhorse kind of mentality. I should love Adriano. Why don't I? And why doesn't anybody? If you read the forums, like, people hate him.
He's Michel Perez without the Polynesia, you know?
But I like Michel Perez, you know? Like,
he's got the Polynesia.
Maybe. I tried to break it down. And the only criticism I can find with...
I'll try to nail it for you. I think the thing with Adriano is you get the sense that he's surfing to become the world champion. And he's since day one, his surfing is... it lacks a little bit of himself. It's almost too sportsmanlike. It doesn't have any... love for the performance art of it all.
That's a good way of articulating it. I hadn't thought of that before. I'm trying to think if there's any other examples of guys like that. Because when you started that by saying he's doing it for the win, well, same could be said for Kelly. But Kelly has a little bit more of that performance art, or a lot more of that performance art in his surfing. So I'm going to have to let that one percolate for a little bit. But I think
that's
you're right.
The problem with a lot of the guys on tour is that they're just a little formulaic and they don't look like they're really expressing themselves. They look like they're out there for points.
Yeah.
And they're busting airs for points and they're busting airs for...
That's a great
Bruce
assessment.
Irons busts airs because it's fun.
Yeah, that's, you know, a great assessment.
And you can see that in people's style.
Yeah, well, if you were to think those two guys are in the final, Julian and Adriano, if they both put out web edits of them free surfing online at the same day... How many people are going to click Adriano's versus Julian's? You know what I mean? Nobody. Nobody wants to watch him surf. But when you watch him in the heat, he deserves to win. And he beat Julian soundly in the final. The only criticism that I could think of prior to you saying that, and this might actually relate to what you said, is that he does big maneuvers, but his fault is in the transitions between maneuvers. You know? Like, getting in from one turn to the next is just either Huntington hop or ticky-tacky or whatever, and it's not appealing to the eye. Whereas you could take a photo of Rob Machado at any part on the wave, and it could make a cover shot, whether he's gliding, trimming, bottom turning, whatever. And I think Julian, he starts a wave, and by the time he ends the wave, it was almost one maneuver from get-up to finish, where it's just... rail to rail to rail to rail, one motion, you know, and transitions.
Yeah, I talked to a guy, or excuse me, I saw an interview with a guy, a world-renowned drummer, Neil Peart, the drummer for Rush. He's basically known as the greatest drummer ever, right?
Well, what does that say about the Allman Brothers, Scott? Well, you just throw the Allman Brothers under the bus?
I'm just saying that it's generally accepted that he's one of the best, if not the best, you know, sans John Bonham drummer ever.
Okay.
And he spoke about the space and the time between the drum beats as being the most important times. Not the drum beat itself, but the pauses and the space and the time in between those. And I think that's what you're speaking about, is those moments between the maneuvers where they're almost as important or they're as crucial to the final outcome as the maneuver itself.
That's excellent. I've never drawn that comparison, but I'm very well aware of that what you're talking about. Do you know what the most important part of comedy is? Timing.
Timing, yeah.
You know what I heard today? Same thing, right?
I heard today that time and space, time exists so that everything doesn't happen to you at once, and space exists so it doesn't all hit you at once.
Again, got to let that one percolate too.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I mean,
I can't take credit for that.
So can I tell you one thing, though, about Adriano's performance that inspired me?
Yeah.
Okay. Relates to what you were talking about, your personal
surfing. We're talking about the horrible surf at Manly.
Correct,
right?
Correct.
The Hurley U.S. Open of Surfing Australian Open at Manly. The waves were disgusting. The waves were horrible.
It's the equivalent event, literally the same event as our U.S. Open of Surfing in Huntington, and the waves are similar. So Adriano inspired me to start surfing waves to the bitter end. And
I am so sorry about that.
No, but let me talk you through
it. That is really sad.
Often, most often, I'll kick out of a wave after the majority of the power is gone. You know, like one turn, two turns, I'm like, I'm out of here. I don't want to connect this thing to the inside. And I watched Adriano milk a couple waves through and actually get more out of them by the end section than I ever anticipated even being on that wave, you know? And my reasons for kicking out of a wave oftentimes are just to save me energy from paddling out a further distance. Or I don't want to work in the slower parts of the wave to like get through the slow section, you know? But it dawned on me of how much of a wuss I'm becoming, you know, in relation to our earlier conversation.
I don't think so, no.
No, well, hear me out. My whole goal for being out there is to ride a wave. I find myself on a wave and I start negotiating what parts are worth riding and what parts aren't. When really all I'm going to do is go back out there and sit longer. Why not freaking enjoy the experience to the end, you know? And so yesterday I thought of Adriano and I had a wave and it was kind of a running right, like down the line, couple little floats, finished the end section and it was whitewash and I had a lot of momentum that I would normally use to just kick over the whitewash with and get out. And I was like, I foam climbed it, came down, foam climbed it again, came down. It's all whitewash at this point. Rebound, bank off the left. And I was like, that was super fun. It was challenging to do these foam climbs, but it was super fun. I have to paddle twice the distance now to get out the back, but who cares? I rode the wave twice the distance. Like, I just really enjoyed it, you know? And it took more energy, but that's why I am here in the first place, you know? So hats off to Adriano for showing me how to surf like a 1998 QS competitor.
All right.
Backhanded compliment of the year.
Fair enough.
Duke and Coop?
You know, I don't have a Duke or Duke. I have a must-watch TV, and I have a best song ever.
I've got a Duke and a Kook real quick.
Yeah.
My Duke of the week is Todd Chesser.
Oh, good one.
Do you know why?
No.
Because yesterday would have been his 47th birthday.
Yes.
And for those who don't remember, Todd Chesser passed away 17 years ago surfing an outer reef on the North Shore known as Alligators, which is actually where Kurt Passamore died this past winter.
Right.
And he was 28 when he died. He's survived by his mom, Jeannie, who you may have seen during the Vulcan Pipe Pro this year. She gave out the Todd Chesser Award to Mason Ho for his courage and, you know, big wave prowess throughout the event. So Todd Chesser is my Duke simply because his surfing was beautiful. You know, power arcs, big waves. Everything that has been written about him confirms that he was pure aloha, positive energy and had an infectious sense of humor. He also served as the big brother to the momentum generation of Kelly Slater, Shane Dorian, Ross Williams, Kalani Robb, all those guys. And really, all those guys have influenced our lives in immeasurable ways. You know, where would we be without those guys? And Todd Chesser was their big brother. He was a couple years older than them, and their big brother when they came to visit the North Shore, because that was his home. So happy birthday, happy 47th birthday to Todd Chesser, and that is why he is my Duke of the Week.
Good one. Very good. Very good.
Real quickly, Kook of the Week. The Barneys who sent me hate mail regarding the Lunada Bay controversy.
Oh, no. Did you get some grief?
I got a lot of positivity, and I got some grief. Yeah. And I just have to say that their main point was that Chris Taloa, whom I interviewed about Lunada Bay, they were saying he's a hypocrite and that he's been involved in territorial violence in the past.
Yeah.
That may be true, but it's not relevant to the fact...
Two wrongs don't make a right.
Oh, dude, half a century... of territorial violence exists at Lunada Bay, regardless of whether Chris is protesting it or not.
Yeah.
The victims of the violence deserve a voice, and we need to thwart any further incidents. If Chris is a reformed perpetrator who is leading the charge to right the wrong, then so be it, you know? Maybe that's part of his reparations for doing wrong in the past. That's not really the focus of what we were doing. We're trying to shine a light on this travesty that's happening. So anyone who does anything to perpetuate the violence or prevent the peaceful protest of the movement taking place at Lunada Bay is missing the entire purpose of the act of surfing. And you're entitled to your opinion, of course, but it's discriminatory, it's elitist, and it's wrong. And I would say that with 100% certainty in my mind, kind of if those people live to see old age, they will reflect on this time in their life. They will feel shame and sorrow for the amount of negative energy that they wasted on defending this perceived possession. And you will understand why I have labeled you the Kook of the Week.
Wow. Very well done. Yeah. I would agree that it's just sort of sad that all that energy goes to such a negative end. You know, it seems to be a waste. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
I'm not going to let them live rent-free in my head. They can...
No.
If they want to be haters, they can be haters. We've got way more positive stuff we can do with our energy. So,
what's your must-see moment?
Good question. Let me see. What is my must-see moment? I have it right here. Bear with me.
Well, I'll give you mine.
Yeah.
My must-see moment is the most horrific YouTube wipeout, or I'm sorry, GoPro wipeout that exists. Did you see this?
I think I have. Which one is this?
It's a girl who has the camera mounted to the front of her board. She's paddling into a wave.
I didn't watch this on purpose because I hate watching people
get
hurt.
Show you then.
Yeah, I don't want to see it.
Okay.
I purposely didn't watch it because I saw the comments on it and how horrible it was and did she live and all this.
She lived. But it's a must-see moment that I won't force you to watch, but I'm going to post it on SurfSplendorPodcast.com. Let me explain it.
Yes.
Girl has the GoPro mounted to the nose of her board. She's in Sri Lanka paddling into a wave. She's obviously a beginner. The wave's coming. There's already somebody on the peak traveling on the wave who's also a beginner on a longboard. She takes one glance over her left shoulder, and he's coming directly at her. The full force of the nose of the 8 to 10 foot longboard hits her in the orbital socket.
Oh my God.
Like, and just KOs her.
Oh my
Full speed, like whiplashes her neck.
Oh no.
She looks unconscious. I mean, honestly, those comments about how did she survive this are legitimate. Thankfully, I found the full version of it. And the guy who posted it, I guess, was her husband or boyfriend or whatever, and he said she's made a full recovery. She's totally fine. But the thing hit her in the eye, but she's bleeding from the mouth.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
But you got to check it out. For those who have morbid curiosity, and I mean, you've probably already seen it. It's been out there, but SurfSplendorPodcast.com. We'll have the link.
That's a must-see moment, huh?
It's insane.
Well, my must-see moment, must-watch TV, is Matt Bromley's Oakley Wave of the Winter People's Choice winner for January.
It. Loved
it's on Surfline. They present this with Oakley. Wave of the Winter People's Choice people voted for this in January, and Matt Bromley, a South African guy, gets this incredible wave at Pipe, and it's hard to believe he comes out of it. Yeah. They presented him with $1,000. What's so neat about it, besides what a great ride it is, and is the short interview that they did with him afterwards, where he describes the ride and then goes on to tell you that he's given the money to his friend's wife who's got some major brain cancer or something. So it leaves you with a really good feeling about human beings and surfers in general. It's sort of the exact opposite of the Lunada Bay thing, where you just feel good about humanity. And so my hat's off to Oakley and to Surfline, and of course to Matt Bromley as well.
What I was struck by with that was that Matt Bromley isn't a name that everybody knows, and the fact that he's from South Africa indicates that he's probably not getting paid as well as a kid from Orange County, California is getting paid, but he's in Hawaii. He ends up getting the best wave of that month at Pipeline, which is a feat in and of itself, and you got the feeling that he could probably use the $1,000. And the friend whom he said he's giving it to is a name that I know from surfing. I can't recall it now, but it was a surfer, kind of a lower-level pro surfer, came out of South Africa 5 or 10 years ago, who is well-respected, ripped, and has since been married, and I guess his wife has contracted this brain cancer. And so, wow, what an amazing move on Matt's part.
Yeah, yeah. So super cool. Check that out. We'll put that up on, that'll be on surfsplendorpodcast.com, I think.
Yeah, and.
It's on Surfline right now, by the way, and we'll put it on downthelineradio.com as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the best song ever.
Let's hear it.
There's no way you can argue with
this. Can't wait.
Words of the song are great.
Who is it?
This is the Allman Brothers, man.
Of course it is.
That must be Dickie Betts singing right there. And Dickie Betts and Warren Hayes. And it's a great song. Back Where It All Begins.
For those who are listening right now, you can't see this on the web, but Scott just shed multiple tears.
I did.
Yeah. Do you have a sentimental attachment to this track or what?
No, I have an eye.
Okay.
I've got a little eye infection.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's my best song ever. Allman Brothers Band, Back Where It All Begins. I've been playing a lot of guitar lately. I've been finding a lot of... listen to... here you go. Listen to this. This is a live set. They're playing live somewhere. All right, I won't bore you. I know you're, look at you, you're
checking my watch.
You're like, dude, time to go.
I think I gotta get out of here. I got a hair appointment.
Yeah, I gotta get going too.
I'm just joking.
All right, well, look, you can shoot me an email, surftalksandiego@gmail.com. surftalksandiego@gmail.com to get a hold of Scott. downthelineradio.com is the website. And, of course, we've got the big boardroom surfboard show, consumer trade show for the core of surf, Del Mar Fairgrounds, May 17th and 18th. If you get a chance and you're not in Southern California, fly out for this. We're going to be honoring Ben Ipa. It's basically the entire surfboard industry gets together, and it's a lot of fun.
I'm going to learn about bat tails while I'm there.
Yes, you are.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm David Scales, surfsplendorpodcast.com. We do a lot of profile pieces on there. Last week, we just released an episode with filmmaking and photography legend Tony Roberts. And so that's been well received. Thanks for the feedback on that.
He's a great surfer, too.
Tony. Oh, my gosh, dude. He rips.
Yeah, he's really good.
He rides like these under 5 foot shortboards with like moon tails, like really weird stuff.
Surfer,
but yeah, incredible. So anyways, check that episode out. And on social media, you can find us at Surf Splendor. thank you for listening and for sharing all this stuff. The shows are growing, so that's great.
Yeah. Until next time, adios and aloha.
Thanks for listening to today's show. Thank you, Scott, for co-hosting. And for everybody listening, in case you didn't catch it, you can find us on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. Also, please engage on social media, Instagram, Twitter, it's @surfsplendor, or facebook.com/surfsplendor. Those numbers have grown, so good to see you all, new fans there. Thanks as always for listening. If you'd like to help grow the show, the best thing that you could do is share it with a friend. So please do that. It's your small investment in the future of the show. The more people who are listening, the more shows we will be able to produce. And also, if you listen in iTunes, please make sure to rate the show and leave a comment. That helps others to find the show and learn about it before they commit to downloading an hour-long episode. Same goes on Stitcher or wherever you listen. I believe that is all. We will be back next week. This is David Scales for Surf Splendor saying mahalo.